You're listening to FMGRadio.com. Welcome to Generation Reinvention, How Baby Boomers Are Changing the Future, with your host, Brent Green.
Welcome back. Today, our guest is David Kravitt, who is an executive with Zoomer Media Limited in Canada, an author, a advertising marketing industry veteran. And what I would like to do right now, David, is kind of move our discussion to a little bit more about Zoomer Media, because I imagine that many of our listeners have never heard of Zoomer Media, but what you've been able to accomplish in Canada caught my eye several years ago and has had my attention for sure. So what can you tell us a little bit about the founding of Zoomer Media and more particularly Moses Znaimer, who is the actual founder of the organization?
Right. Well, there's really a weaving together of two separate stories. The Moses story is the most interesting, I guess, because he is known as one of the most innovative, if not, I think, the most innovative broadcasting creative guru, genius, innovator in Canada. Starting in his 20s, was a superstar with the CBC, with our national public TV network. Right. Then started an independent station, was a part of a founding group of a very innovative station called City TV. Then created a number of specialty cable networks, Much Music, which was the earliest music video, Book TV, Space TV, all kinds of different topics on cable. So the lifetime of creativity, always catering to that market. So he pioneered a lot of the formats that the baby boomers followed when they were younger. And he's watched that group age as he has grown older, as we've all grown older, and he identified that the next big opportunity was going to be to build a media company that was targeting that group only. And he put together, by acquiring some other pieces of the puzzle, he acquired the two radio stations, a public company called 50 Plus Net, which owned a number of internet properties, a magazine called CARP Magazine, which was produced for CARP, which is the Canadian analog of AARP, and then most recently Vision Television, a television network substantially in religious and multi-faith programming, but which attracts that same audience. So he's put together under a publicly traded company called Zoomer Media Limited, both online and offline media properties, all focusing on Zoomers. And the word Zoomer was a phrase that he coined when he thought of baby boomers with zip. So boomers plus zip equals Zoomers. And the definition was extended beyond baby boomers. The oldest baby boomer is 65. So we've extended the definition right through to the end of the lifespan. But it basically means that we've got a media company whose only focus is let's say 45 plus audience. And when you have that, you can tailor your programming, your delivery, your efficiencies, your message, everything to that audience, both online and offline. So I think we are a unique company in that way in North America.
Well, that's incredibly visionary, and obviously to understand this evolving organization, it's interesting to look at the story and the life of Moses Znaimer. How has that vision changed since the formative years? Has anything been adjusted? Have you gone a different direction, or are you pretty much on the same path you initially started?
I think we're on the same path. I think what's happened, of course, as we get larger in our revenue with the acquisition of the TV network, the revenues are larger, of course, and the base that we're operating from, the interest in the company and in the financial community and so on, all those things go up. The credibility with advertisers goes up. The opportunity to have partnerships, international partnerships to acquire content internationally and to distribute our content internationally. We have several interesting things cooking with content providers, websites, TV production TV content providers in the United States and elsewhere. So the scalability goes up. I think the ability to deliver meaningfully for advertisers goes up, but the basic strategy has remained. And we are looking now at logical extensions from a media point of view of, where does it go in terms of mobile? Where does it go? We have an interesting program online now with Kobo, which is the Canadian version of the Kindle reader, an e-reader, to market e-books. So we're looking at every conceivable channel, to reach this market. And we're also looking at diversifying the content to include both information and entertainment. So we're a little bit unique that way in that we can also produce a lot of our own content and offer those kinds of sponsorship and content partnership opportunities both to other content providers and to advertisers. So that would be a big advantage and right. I think, though, that his vision has been very, very, very focused. We also have, of course, a Zoomer show, a consumer show that we run in Toronto and in Vancouver.
Right. Uh-huh.
And we also have a couple of think tank type shows. He owns Idea City, and there's a conference that CARP runs that brings together speakers on aging and on, the future of aging. And then, of course, the big difference, and this is absolutely unique, is that we are affiliated with CARP, which is the Association for Zoomers in Canada, 300,000 plus members, and the potential influence that CARP can have by being attached to a media company. And it's not owned by CARP, as a not-for-profit, but we run CARP's media assets, and Moses is the president of CARP, and we're very closely allied with CARP. So imagine a advocacy organization that also has those captive media channels, if you will. The potential impact is yet to be felt. We're just getting rolling in that area, but it's going to be profound.
Well, that's why I wanted to talk about this opportunity in this segment, because I wanted our listeners to wrap their brains around the scope of this opportunity in a country that has a aging population that is actually aging faster than the U.S. and
yes.
How rebranding aging has taken place, a lot of it due to the founding vision of Moses Neimer. Now, one thing has changed that I was able to pick up on. I'm going to quote him right now. He said, "We are pleased to report our first profitable quarter. The recent additions of television and radio to our existing Zoomer-oriented magazine and web assets positions us perfectly to ride the surging demographic wave, which is the Zoomer market." Now, what was the reaction internally to that?
Well, that really does reflect a couple of realities at once. Number one, the acquisition of the TV network not only rounds out the media portfolio, so you've got print, radio, TV, web, consumer shows, but it all, of course, brings with it a significant revenue, which really gives the company the resources to continue to grow. So it's tremendously significant. When you add to it the close link to an organization that is advocating on behalf of the aging population and seeking to influence policy and the direction of, how the society is aging for the benefit of our members, that combination doesn't exist anywhere. And we are already seeing that. We're already seeing a lot of attention now being paid by the political parties and the policymakers and the think tanks and all the research groups toward our company, on the for-profit side towards Zoomer Media, and on the advocacy side and the policy side to CARP. And the combination of that in one organization where we can, leverage the same research data, the same, consumer information, policy research, and so on, is, I think, completely unique. And I think it's going to have a tremendous, impact on Canadian society and probably a model for other countries to take a really good look at.
Well, that's why I took a look at it in my
I know. You were one of the first to really see the potential up here, which we certainly appreciate.
I got it fairly quickly. So, you know, the question that I've been kind of grappling with, since I don't live in Canada, and this is really a qualitative question, but do you think Canadian boomers have come to see themselves as, quote-unquote, Zoomers? Are you seeing a shift in the perceptions and expectations among this group about their own aging? Do you think that's happening?
Well, there's no question that the attitude is happening. The phrase has been, the name, nomenclature, whatever you want to call it, I guess the name has been picked up very quickly and adapted very quickly. And I think what I'm most encouraged by is that the most important aspect of the Zoomer idea, which is the word engagement, that has definitely been picked up. So people who can engage at a high level of income and spending and a whole sort of lifestyle orientation, they can embrace it. People who are have more moderate means but want to stay involved intellectually or activities, volunteering, participating, you know, within the limits of what their resources are, they can embrace it. So we're seeing people put their own spin on it, which you have to. I mean, you have 14.5 million people, 58% of all the adults, coming, and boomers being highly individualistic people to begin with. So there's never going to be one size fits all. There's never going to be one sort of prototypical Zoomer that fits everything. But the common denominator that we are seeing is engagement. I'm a player. I'm taking an active role in my life. I'm engaged in society. I'm engaged in trying to impact the way I live. And that is a common denominator that we are definitely seeing here in Canada. What kind of spending does it manifest itself with? Well, you know, for the advertiser, what products are they buying? How are rich Zoomers behaving differently than less rich Zoomers? Those variations, of course, exist and always will. But the notion of, boy, it's great to be active, it's great to be engaged and involved, I think that has been picked up, and we're seeing a tremendous response to that idea.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, I was reading this last week, and I read something of a tongue-in-cheek, cynical column in the Vancouver Sun, making, if you will, a little bit of fun of the Zoomer show, which she called Zoomerville. And so she said, quote, "But why do we boomers always feel so compelled to reinvent the wheel? Why are we so worried that we might be left behind or horrors forgotten as the younger generations start stalking our savannah? Isn't relinquishing the throne part of the beauty of growing old gracefully?" Unquote. That raises an interesting dichotomy of views about the future of aging. What were your thoughts about that?
Well, I think that on the one hand, the quote reflects the diversity in that age group. It doesn't surprise me that not everybody's going to look at it the same way. But in another sense, I think she misses the real point, because one can relinquish the throne, quote unquote, and it doesn't mean one is passive about the rest of one's life. That doesn't mean that one has to accept bad outcomes for one's, let's say, health and well-being. It doesn't mean one can't re-engage in other ways. And I think there is a tendency to look at the more, let's say, hyperactive consumption aspect of a baby boomer and say, well, yeah, not everybody wants to go skydiving at the age of 70. Not everybody wants to be go, 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 go. What's wrong with just sitting back or kicking back? But what we're seeing is that even the people that are sitting back and kicking back are still at least intellectually and physically in the game. They're rediscovering, they're learning. Some of them are doing it very quietly. They're maybe taking a course. They're recircling an issue. There's a lot of great reinterest in spirituality. You know, what does it all mean? What am I trying to do here? There's a great deal of interest in intergenerational wisdom. What am I passing on to my kids? Writing one's biography, the engagement takes many forms. I think she's quite correct in saying it doesn't all have to be, look at me spending millions of dollars and refusing to, you know, give up my corner office. There's people who do want to keep that corner office. There's people who do want to give it up. There's people who never had it in the first place. All of the above. But the common thread that we're seeing is I'm still active, whatever that means. I'm still engaged, at least intellectually and emotionally. And above all, as we age and, you know, health and policy concerns become really important, I still want to play a role in trying to influence my own life for the best. And I don't think that's at all in retreat.
Well, you know, when we come back, we're going to discuss this in a little more depth. Let's call it old thinking about growing old versus new thinking. And what may have this columnist missed in her point of view, even though, as David says, all points of view are valid, but things are changing. So when we come back, we will continue this discussion about the new old.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you for staying with us. This is Brent Green. You're listening to Generation Reinvention, and our guest today, David Kravit, who is with Zoomer Media Limited in Canada. And we've been having a very active discussion about many issues, but what we need to take a look at is some fundamental questions about what is changing about aging. So, David, in your book, The New Old, you coined a term you call boomer aging, which is one word, boomer and aging. What do you mean by this term, boomer aging?
I think the biggest difference is that the boomers want to maintain some degree of engagement and control to the degree possible of the things that happen naturally as they age. So the boomers are lucky, I suppose. We are the beneficiary, and I'm a boomer, obviously. We're beneficiaries of science and technology that allow us to live longer and live better for a longer period of time. When I was a little kid growing up, if somebody died at the age of 70, you said they lived a full life. Today, if you hear of somebody, you know, in your own life, Brent, or any of your listeners, if you hear of somebody that died at 70, boy, he was only 70?
Right.
Gee, that's young. That's young. Uh-huh. He's only 70. Now, when you meet him when he's 70, you don't think he's young. But if he dies when he's 70, you think he got, you know, cheated somehow. So we're living longer. So the question then becomes, if I'm living longer, do I have to kind of surrender all control? And the big distinction I make is between what you might call the old age pensioner attitude, which is, all right, I've lived my life. I've got my gold watch. All I want is another few years of dignified decline till the end. Whereas uh-huh. Now a 65-year-old today who is in reasonable health can look forward to at least another 20 years, maybe longer. So if you think in your brain, or a 60-year-old could maybe even aspire to 30 years, well, that's an awful long time to be passively old. So you begin to think, well, what am I going to do with that time? How do I, first of all, make sure that I have a higher quality of life for as long as possible? So there's a great interest now in health and wellness and prevention and living with certain chronic conditions that may be inevitable when you age, but how do I go on living with them? In the previous generations, there wasn't that same concern with wellness and prevention and diet and exercise and all that. That's a sign of being active. That's a sign of trying to keep control. There's a great engagement, and we'll talk about that later, I guess, you know, uh-huh. What we can, you know, political engagement. So
right.
I think that's the difference. The difference, now, as I said to you earlier in talking about this woman's column, yes, some of them are still conspicuous, you know, consumers, and media companies like ours want to and should let advertisers know what the size of that market is and the desirability of that market. But even the ones that are not wealthy are in their own way remaining engaged. And what we see particularly at Zoomer Media is that there's a hunger for information. They are very active seekers out of information that will enable them to live longer and live better. And the smart marketers, I think, are now beginning to realize that if they can kind of hook up to that quest for information, that's really the key to reaching that market, because that's what the boomers are all after. Previous generations accepted certain things that came with aging and were kind of passive about it. They were letting it happen to them. The boomers are saying, yes, I understand I'm going to be older. I understand that at the age of 60, I'm not in the same shape I was in when I was 25, but I'm going to make it into my 80s and 90s, and I want to stay fit and vigorous and in the game as long as I can. And that's a real big difference. That's a big change.
Right. One of the ways you illustrate that in your book, and in a very graphic way, is you show a photo of your grandfather, Isaac Kravitz, at age 65, and then right next to that is a photo of Mick Jagger at age 63. And, you know, objectively, if you look at your grandfather's face, his photo, you know, you could make the argument that Mick Jagger's very craggy face looks a lot older. I mean, at least there's more wisdom lines on his face, but we think Mick Jagger is a younger, dynamic kind of aging person. What were your thoughts when you...
Well, exactly, though, because you see, now, so my grandfather retired at 65. He actually lived into his 90s, but he was old for 30 years.
Yeah.
Well, who are you? Well, I'm an old age pensioner. And, you know, he woke up every day. He had a very limited range of what he was interested in doing. It was all good. I mean, he saw family and, you know, grandchildren and all that, but he really wasn't about to conquer any new worlds. Mick Jagger is still performing.
Right.
Now, you know, I don't think it's a big stretch to say he isn't performing because he needs the money, certainly. He could certainly sit back and enjoy the money he's made, and whatever elements of his lifestyle he wanted to pay for, he could certainly pay for. Why is he still performing? Look at all the performers that are over the age of 50 or 60 that are still performing. Why? They don't need to do it to pay the bills, but they're engaged, they're active, they're engaged in the world. They look and feel modern. They have websites. They have that's the difference. It's similarly in my grandfather's era, there was no concern about health other than when you got sick. Mick Jagger, I know, is a exercise freak, I think. I'm not saying he hasn't abused his body over the years, but he's apparently very into, you know, exercise and keeping slim. And I think the shape he must be in to be able to sustain that career is pretty impressive. All of these guys, in spite of their various experimentations with drugs, are, you know, remarkably, can sustain a remarkably demanding lifestyle. And we
Absolutely.
See this with writers, we see this with performers, we see this with thinkers, we see this with painters. They want to the work almost as a form of validation. It's not just I made my money and now I'm going to go quietly and have a little bit of peace and quiet. My grandfather was passive and the new old are active.
So that's definitely one way in which you're framing this this image
so.
Of aging. And clearly, if you've seen the Martin Scorsese movie featuring the Rolling Stones, which was made just a couple, 3 years ago, and watched Jagger perform, you just can't believe that you're looking at a man that now is past 65.
Yes, exactly.
And it's not just the, I mean, his face looks, I mean, again, he's got a lot of wisdom lines pretty deeply carved into his face. But you don't see that. What you see is this bundle of vitality that's kind of coming from some inner place. And I've been well aware that a lot of what we're thinking about in terms of boomer aging is not only the attitude of a generation, but also the convergence of technology. Because as you are pointing out, Zoomers reach out to each other through social networking platforms, including your own social networking platform, which is a very active place. Where I happen to be a member, you know.
Yep, exactly. And they're doing it. And I think there is a sense of not wanting to feel, what's the word, on the shelf. I mean, you know, Mick Jagger moves around a lot. I went to a concert a year ago here in Toronto, part of the tour of Elton John and Billy Joel performing together, the two facing pianos on the stage, and it was both of them Zoomers, you know, well into their 50s, if not 60s, and the energy level and the, you know, what they gave to the audience. And I'm not just talking physically, I mean emotionally, intellectually, I mean the energy commitment, let's say, the transfer of energy was substantial. And again, two people that could, if they want, sit back and be very careful, certainly wouldn't need to go on tour, might do a TV special now and then, but there they were, and they did not act like people of the same age, let's say, as my grandpa was.
You know, another area that is becoming a part of what you call, or what the term you coined, boomer aging, is the harsh realities that boomers are also facing today. I quote you in this statement: they grew up in an era that encouraged debt, in part because of high inflation, and discouraged savings. Did you ever meet a marketer in your 30-year-plus career who would hope that boomers would spend less on their product or service?
No, of course not. No, exactly. But it's true, though, that if you had gone into Barnes & Noble or any bookstore in the 1970s when Jimmy Carter was in the White House and the prime interest rate was 18%, all of the smart, the Susie Ormans or whoever was of that age were saying to you, borrow every nickel you can, get the biggest possible balance on the most number of credit cards that you can, because you're paying off in inflated dollars. Don't have cash. Cash is bad. Debt is good. And The boomers were all 35 years old. You were born in 1946. You were 30 years old when Jimmy Carter was in the White House, just with your young kids and plenty of plastic. And all of the smart financial gurus were telling you that it was insane to worry about cash. It was rational to pile up the debt.
Well,
and you did.
Right.
And they did.
Yeah, and actually that was the strength of our economy, was boomer spending in every product category. And, the people that were selling them products and services honestly didn't have a problem with that. Another thing that I write and talk about is the fact that a lot of the real changes in our fundamental society, from going from a manufacturing and service society to a knowledge-based society, the boomers were often penalized. I mean, that led to the big closing of the steel plants and a lot of the manufacturing in the U.S., the auto companies downsizing and so forth. And so a lot of that boomer debt, it belongs to people who have been struggling with an economy that kind of left them behind at a critical time in their careers. So that kind of leads
us. They're caught in between the two worlds in a way. You're quite right.
So that leaves us with a situation that we're looking at for the future, which is something you're going to be addressing in your new book, which I wanted to have a moment to talk about, The Age Rage, The War of the Generations. I know that's a working title, but what are some of your essential thoughts behind this book? What are some of the essential premises?
Well, what I'm working on, and you touched on it exactly, the people who have been left behind, but also the fact that if we live longer and longer, the number of people who have the money to be able to retire and do nothing, or do nothing in the sense of not bringing new cash in, that challenge is only going to increase. The fastest growing segment of the population are centenarians now. So now you retire at 65 and you got a shot at 100.
Right.
Not that many people have 35 years worth of money or have a nest egg big enough to throw off enough interest to pay for 35 years. So there's going to be a crunch coming, there already is, in which the boomers are going to need to hold on to and compete with the younger people for scarce resources. And I'm going to look at that as a battle for, a pie that isn't necessarily expanding all the time.
Uh-huh.
And my thesis is that the boomers will make sure that they're taken care of, and they may be actually better equipped to win the battle in the short term than the younger generation coming on. That if there's a choice between closing a school and cutting back Social Security, I'm going to argue that the older people are going to win that battle.
Well, that's been proven in the past, because a lot of the changes in Medicare funding policies, the increase in rates in Social Security, being withheld from checks, things like that were driven by older generations that were then the recipients. I'm talking about the parents and sometimes the grandparents of the baby boomers.
Right. So but as you know, we've got the, you know, the triangle, as you know, the pyramid's going to be upside down now.
Right.
We were always able to fund, you know, Moses Neimer made this comment once that the very, very first old age pensions ever were introduced in Germany by Bismarck.
Right.
And he picked the age of 65.
Right.
Because the average lifespan was like 68.
You know, David, the whole idea of Bismarck has been commented on a lot by people in our industry because really the conception of retirement is you wouldn't live past it. So that's changing, and a lot is going to be changing in the future. So why don't we take another final break? We'll be back in just a little moment from here, and we will continue our conversation with David Kravitz about the future of Zoomers and Zoomer Media.
You're listening to the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is have fun, make money, do good. We provide platforms to individuals who have a cause, message, or information that they would like to share with the world. If you'd like to join the FMG family and have your own radio show, please call us at 1-800-470-4982. That's 1-800-470-4982. We look forward to hearing from you.
Welcome back. Thank you for staying with us. This is Brent Green. Again, if you want to participate in this show, be certain to send me an email at brent@bgassociates.com, and I'll be happy to respond to your comment or question. We're talking with David Kravitz, who is with Zoomer Media Limited in Canada, and we've touched on a lot of issues that certainly have impact on the kind of future we're going to be living. In fact, David, you talk about in your book, The New Old, that, you know, there's physical aging, of course, but you describe oldness as a combination of attitudes, habits, and behaviors. So looking down the road, maybe 5, 10 years, whatever, what would you predict will change in the attitudes about aging?
Well, I think the first thing that we're already seeing is the expectation of being able to influence one's own environment for a lot longer. The threshold just gets being pushed up and up and up, and I think that's really a function of the science. If you live in a world in which the average age is in the young 70s and you're 70 and you think you've only got a couple years left to go, you may want to retreat a little bit. You may want to just say, you know, thank God I'm okay, and I just hope to enjoy my grandchildren. I really can't get too engaged in society. There's really no point starting any big, ambitious projects because I'm just not going to be around. If you think you have 25, 30 years left to go, you're going to feel very differently about that degree of passivity. And each year, science is pushing that threshold up and up and up. So on the science front, it looks good. On the how do I pay for it front, and is there an infrastructure in the rest of society to support me or to support my needs? That's a whole other problem. And I think that mismatch is what's going to cause all the problems from a policy point of view, from a social point of view. It's the mismatch between how long I can live and live well physically, and do I have enough money, and whose resources am I poaching on in order to keep the music going?
Yes, that kind of leads to the thought about aging relative to habits. And habits have traditionally been at 65, take a hike, go play golf, wander over the horizon to your great reward, the golden years. So
right.
How do you see the habits around aging changing as a result of the attitudes changing?
Well, I think the habits are going to change because I think the boomers are already finding out, certainly on behalf of their parents, and then they're soon going to find out on behalf of themselves that they've got to scrap a little bit to make sure that the package is going to be in place. If you take a look at the kind of debate going on now in the U.S. around Social Security and what's affordable and when should you take it and should you take it and or wait or not wait, and is there going to be any left? In Canada, there's similar debates around will the healthcare system begin to be able to sustain aging, the aging boomers, and if not, what do we have to do to the healthcare system? So very similar debates in both countries, although there's quite different social structures. And you're seeing this now a little bit in the energizing of the baby boomers or the 50-plus voters starting to pay more attention to age-related topics. In the past, if I had surveyed the 60-year-old population of the United States or Canada 20 years ago, there wouldn't necessarily be a correlation between the age and what party you supported. Or even what policies you supported, you know, left wing, right wing, middle wing. Today, there's starting to be a coalescing around. Well, you know, by nature, I might be left wing or liberal, or I might be conservative, but I'm kind of driven together to a common cause around healthcare or around benefits or around Social Security. And I think that's new. There's going to be a age related agenda for the first time. And there's going to be I have the power to make sure that my needs are looked after because the size of the generation is so big. So I don't have to accept a bad outcome anymore, and I'm going to fight a little bit longer and a little bit more actively. And that's a kind of a return to when the boomers were younger.
Right.
Because they were the people on college campuses stirring up all the trouble, you know, anti-war in Vietnam, all that stuff. And it was almost a cliche. The youth are the rebels, and they're all stirring up trouble, and then they settle down and have kids and blah, blah, blah. Well, now maybe they become the rebels again because they're saying, you know, I see a threat to my well-being. And I've got the votes, I've got this, my cohort is big enough to kind of get what we want, and we're just not going to go quietly.
Well, you know, that is obviously something that we're all wondering, how boomer zoomers are going to move into this stage of their life where there are a lot of threats from public support of aging through, in the U.S., the Social Security program and so forth. And, you know, Zoomer Media and your various properties have been very much at the forefront, and that's why it's been so intriguing to me, on watching and participating in the changes that boomer Zoomers are showing. In other words, social networking, which a lot of times people thought would be where the young people spend their time, which is true, but look at what Zoomers are doing on your various websites to connect and engage in groups and things like that. What other kinds of behaviors do you anticipate will be changing, like social network, like online engagement, as we continue to age?
Well, I think that a lot. I think online is going to be a big common denominator for a lot of this. We're already seeing the use of instant information, the ability to do research and get information and exchange information, is now moving off the internet into mobile phones. It's moving into e-readers, whether it's Kindle or iPad or whatever. So it's going to be an efficient way of getting information and using that information to be able to, you know, live longer and live better. That's one thing that we're going to see. And I think you know, other than maybe the size of the text on, you know, the handhelds, the boomers are moving very, very quickly into that. The second big trend I would be on the lookout for is I don't know how to coin the phrase. Maybe, you know, buy one get one free. Maybe that, you know, because I have a 45, 50 year old now with parents in their 70s and 80s. We have in Canada and the United States, for the first time in history, a parent and a child both on Social Security. So if I'm a 63-year-old American, as young as 63, I could have an 89, 90-year-old parent. And there's got to be a number greater than zero of people that fit that, you know. So I've got two people now who are very aware of aging. Even a young 40-ish person on behalf of an aging parent who may be motivated around Social Security because, boy, they cut off mom and dad, I'm going to have to pay for this. So now you have double whammy of more people engaged with the issue of aging, engaged with the idea of aging, who are maybe not aged themselves, but have parents that are of that age, and they have to look after those parents. And so you get that cascade all the way back through the system. And I think that's a very big factor that not enough people are paying attention to. One out of four adults are caregivers. You know, you and I have talked about this, caregivers.
Right.
But the attitudinal part is what you were asking. If I'm in my young 40s and I've got parents in their 70s, 80s, or if I'm 50, forget the demographics of what's, I've got 15 years to go till Social Security. I've already got parents in their 70s and 80s. So I'm kind of sucked into that world of starting to have to pay attention to aging. So you have like double the number of people now that are paying attention to that aging. And when I look at some of the projections in the U.S. now about when Social Security is going to really be in trouble, the people that are going to be feeling that brunt are now 30. Well, in 15 years, a 30-year-old is going to be a Zoomer, you know. So they're all gravitating toward that same space. And that's where, and that's going to be a very profound tilt to where aging becomes the dominant social issue, in my opinion.
Right. Well, that is also something that raises the specter and shoots up the warning flag on ageism. Obviously, if people see that their own financial solvency is being impacted by the aging population, it raises the concern that ageism will creep up. Do you see it being overcome in media? Because we do have plenty of examples of ageist kinds of media messages out there. Do you envision a time where we will be back to honoring aging and the value of aging in our societies?
Well, I think we will for two very different reasons. One is I think that as the knowledge economy, we're under pressure to compete now. And it's clearly the knowledge economy that's going to be the source of growth. There's going to be a premium placed on the knowledge and wisdom, if you will, of the accumulated experience of the baby boomers and older. That's number one. Number two, the completely different thing, as they start to get more familiar with social media and the ability to quickly form groups, pressure groups, influence groups, send out comments by Twitter, etc., they will begin to take revenge on companies and marketers and purveyors of messages that are ageist. So they will go from complaining, sort of the embittered old man shaking his fist at the young whippersnappers, which is the cliche, they're not going to be able to do something about it, and they're going to get online and tell their friends, don't buy that product, don't patronize that business, don't go to that store, don't buy that brand. And I think companies are going to find a very aggressive cohort of people who are now empowered by the technology to very quickly come together into a group and do something to get what they want, frankly.
Right. Well, we could talk a lot longer. Unfortunately, we've reached the time that we need to say goodbye to David. I want to thank you for spending
time. Well, I've enjoyed it. Thank you. It's just been great.
Yeah, we appreciate your exceptional insights about how boomers are becoming Zoomers and changing the nature of aging in our Western countries. So to our listeners, I'd like to say you can discover much more about the subjects we've been discussing today by visiting many of Zoomer Media's websites. Primarily, I would send you first to 50plus.com. That's 50 and then PLUS.com. And if you would like to reach David Kravitz yourself, you can email him at davidc@zoomer, that's Z-O-O-M-E-R, .ca, davidc@zoomer.ca. Thank you again, David. We'd like
to
have you
back. Well, thanks so much for having me, Brent. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
All right. Well, next time our guest will be Lori Bitter. She's the president of Continuum Crew, an integrated communications firm focused on engaging mature consumers. She is responsible for the strategy and the leadership of this company. Now, Lori launched Continuum Crew after the closure of JWT Boom, the nation's leading mature marketing, advertising, and agency company. JWT stands for J. Walter Thompson, for those of you in the ad biz. So it was a big interest in this market. So she was responsible for mature consumer strategy across a number of industries, including packaged goods, housing, pharmaceuticals, healthcare, and many others. She's had more than 25 years of experience in advertising, public relations, and strategic planning. And formerly, she was with Ken Dykewald's company, AgeWave, as Senior Vice President and Director of Client Services. And there she handled initiatives for AOL, Listerine, SunSuite, AARP, IBM, Subway, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and many other companies interested in the 50-plus consumer. So I look forward to talking with you again next time. Please send me your questions and your comments by emailing me at brent@bgassociates.com. Thank you for listening to Generation Reinvention.
You've been listening to Generation Reinvention with your host, Brent Green. Visit Brent at his website at generationreinvention.com. And for archive shows, be sure to visit his show page here on the FMG Radio Network, where our motto is, have fun, make money.